This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. President Bush will speak tonight to the Republican National Convention by satellite. His scheduled appearance last night was canceled, along with most of yesterday's convention plans, because of Hurricane Gustav. My guest Peter Baker writes about the rocky relationship between the president and John McCain in this week's New York Times Magazine. Baker is a national correspondent for the Times and is working on a book about the Bush presidency. He's at the Republican convention in the Twin Cities. Peter Baker, welcome back to Fresh Air. What do you know about what's been going on behind the scenes of the McCain campaign in terms of figuring out what their strategy will be now during the convention in the wake of the hurricane and of the revelations about Sarah Palin?
Well, this has been a week of complete improvisation by the McCain campaign for obvious reasons. They've basically thrown out the script, both on the vice presidential choice and on the hurricane. You know, most McCain staffers didn't expect it to be Sarah Palin either, so this caught a lot of people by surprise. As recently just a couple nights ago, they were calling around a Republican operative saying, hey, can you scramble and get out to Alaska for us? They've got a team up there on the ground right now that will help do their own research into her background beyond the initial vetting that they've done, and to help answer questions by reporters and prepare for the politics of a vice presidential campaign. And then the hurricane, you know, obviously that's something nobody could have expected to come at this exact moment. The irony of 3 years just after Katrina is lost on no one. Fortunately, it turned out not to be, you know, the sort of catastrophe that they had in 2005. And now they're trying to get back going with the convention with a sort of abbreviated format. But I think you'll start to see a lot more of the conventional convention starting tonight.
Is the McCain campaign convinced that it did an adequate job vetting Sarah Palin?
They say that she was fully vetted, that she was looked at just as thoroughly as any of the other finalists that they considered. But there's certainly some reason to look at that and wonder exactly. I mean, she clearly came up late in the process as the final choice the senator made, and you know, a team didn't arrive in Alaska until Thursday, last Thursday, the same day that she was being offered the job. So, you know, unlike some of the other candidates he was considering who were well-known on the national stage and have been vetted, in effect, by the national media before, so any issues were already more or less on the table, Sarah Palin's something of an unknown. And so we're now beginning to pour through her life and seeing all the impressive things and the other things that are issues that she and her family have to deal with.
President Bush was supposed to speak last night at the Republican convention, but because of Hurricane Gustav, the McCain campaign and the convention, they threw out all of their plans. So it was unclear whether President Bush would end up speaking at the convention or not. Now we know he's going to speak tonight by video to the convention. You've just written an article for the New York Times Magazine about the rocky relationship between John McCain and President Bush. What do you know about what happened behind the scenes in terms of deciding whether or not to use tonight as a second chance for President Bush to speak to the convention?
Well, I mean, look, there's no question that if you were to get some of Senator McCain's closest advisors, you know, to take a polygraph test, they really open up. They would probably acknowledge that they were never all that thrilled about having President Bush address the convention. And that, you know, the hurricane coming along gave them sort of a convenient way of sort of avoiding that, at least an in-person address. At the same time, they want to be careful because while President Bush is unpopular with the broad public, he still has a lot of support among solid conservatives, Republicans, and those are the people who are here at this convention. So any appearance of disrespecting him would be a problem for Senator McCain, given that the hurricane didn't turn out to be as devastating as some had feared. People would wonder, I think, why he didn't then, you know, get a chance to address the convention at least by video over the next few days. And so they really had no choice but to arrange something like this. And for his part, I don't think President Bush was all that looking forward to coming here and, you know, celebrating John McCain's takeover of the party, in effect. I mean, Senator McCain has run a, you know, pretty tough campaign with regard to President Bush. Up just a few weeks ago, he ran an ad that said, we're worse off than we were 4 years ago. That's the kind of ad the opposition runs usually, not the standard bearer of your own party. So there's no great enthusiasm between these two men, but they also have their fates tied together by history. It's in both of their interests that Senator McCain win this election, and they're both doing what they can to do that.
The Obama campaign has been describing the McCain campaign as four more years of Bush-Cheney. And you say about McCain, quote, he finds himself saddled with the baggage of a man he never much liked to begin with, forced to live with a record he personally considers deeply lacking, and portrayed as if he were a clone of his longtime adversary, unquote. What were some of the things that the Bush campaign did against the McCain campaign in 2000 when McCain was running in the primary for the Republican nomination? Things that the Bush campaign did that were most infuriating to McCain?
Well, the crucible came in South Carolina, which is the most important primary that followed Senator McCain's upset victory in New Hampshire. And that was just a two-week period of brutal, very low-ball politics in which flyers and telephone calls around the state spread all sorts of insidious and mostly false stories about Senator McCain, you know, that he was some sort of Manchurian candidate, that he had fathered a black child out of wedlock, that that his wife was a drug addict, all sorts of stuff that was just very, very, you know, scurrilous in most cases. And while they never had any evidence that the Bush campaign per se was involved in any of this, certainly to the McCain camp, they knew who benefited by it, and that was something that colored the relationship forever. Senator McCain wrote in one of his memoirs, you know, about the night of the New Hampshire primary when he and Governor Bush called. It was a concession call. He says, "We hung up the phone that night as friends. We would be friends no longer." Today both men and their people would tell you, "Well, we got over that a long time ago." But there's still, it's hard to get over that sort of thing, and it still, I think, frames the dealings between these two men, and certainly, for instance, Cindy McCain continues, I think, according to people around them, to remain very bitter about the way her family was dragged through the mud.
John McCain deplored the kind of negative tactics that Karl Rove was behind in politics, yet now McCain has two people who worked on Rove's team, Steve Schmidt and Nicole Wallace, in key positions within McCain's campaign. Do you know why he hired people who practiced the kind of tactics that McCain has said he deplored?
Well, I'm not sure I would buy that, actually. You know, the idea that Steve Schmidt and Nicole Wallace are Karl Rove clones, I think, is sort of not very true. I mean, did they work in the Bush White House? Yes, they did. And did they work in Bush campaigns? Yes, they did. And so in that sense, obviously, they have seen Karl Rove's strategies up close and been part of them in that sense, but they're not his proteges. That's been sort of exaggerated, I think. Both of them, in fact, spent their time in the White House at various moments fighting with Karl Rove over various things. They're not going to advertise that today, but they're not Karl Rove clones. You know, I think the senator's campaign this last few weeks and months has obviously gotten sharper in its attacks on Senator Obama. It's certainly taken a more negative tack. That's not entirely surprising for an underdog campaign. But, you know, I'm not sure how far it's gone over any lines at this point. I mean, you know, pointing out that Senator Obama seems to be a celebrity is hardly the same thing as some of the stuff that Senator McCain was subjected to in South Carolina. But we'll see. It's still early. We're just at Labor Day. We're just the beginning of the fall campaign. We've just finished the preseason, and we're only now beginning into the regular season. So we'll see how far this goes. There's a lot of questions as to whether Senator McCain compromises those kind of values that he talks about in terms of campaigns for the chance to win. This is going to be a real test for him.
One of the places where John McCain has supported President Bush most strongly is the war in Iraq. You got access to a private 3-page letter in which John McCain warned Bush that he would lose the war without an increase in forces. Can you tell us when the letter was sent and what it said?
Right. This is December of 2006. The Republicans had just lost the Congress in midterm elections, and Donald Rumsfeld had just been fired or pushed out as defense secretary. And this is a moment when President Bush was rethinking his strategy, and Senator McCain decided that he had to weigh in if he had any chance of influencing policy. It was the first time Senator McCain had advocated more troops in Iraq, but he saw the body politic in Washington going the other direction, you know, the Baker-Hamilton report and a lot of the new Democrats taking over Congress, and even a lot of Republicans were saying, it's time to withdraw, it's time to begin pulling out, we need to look at scaling back our presence there. And McCain says, no, it's the exact opposite approach. The whole idea of a political reconciliation without fostering security first is lunatic, and you have to do it the other way around. You have to create an environment in which people can safely talk about their differences and create a peaceful resolution to them, and the only way to do that is with more troops on the ground. It was a risky move. It was a risky move for both him and President Bush, and I think that's obviously one risk that today looks better than it did at the time.
How influential would you say McCain was in convincing President Bush to go forward with the surge?
I think he was influential. I don't know whether it was a deciding factor, but, you know, this is a moment when President Bush looked around him and found everybody telling him not to do it, you know, including his own Joint Chiefs of Staff, his field commanders, his Secretary of State, again, the Baker-Hamilton Commission, which represented in some ways the voices of his father's administration. He was a very lonely figure when he decided to authorize the additional 30,000 troops for Iraq. And I think to have Senator McCain there backing him up, I think probably did embolden him. At least it made him think, well, at least I've got, you know, the support of this fellow who's been pretty tough on me over these years, and he's going to stick with me on this policy, and he's going to be running for president, so he's also got something at stake here. And I think it brought them together in a way. I think they both emerge from that moment with more respect for each other. I think they both sat there and said, you know, here is leadership under pressure, and they looked at each other and said, this is somebody we can do business with in the end.
What are your impressions of how confident the McCain campaign is that they will win the election?
I don't think they're overconfident on this right now. I mean, it's an interesting situation where the national polls have been pretty even, and in some ways they're doing much better than a lot of people had expected. Senator McCain's running far ahead of the generic Republican number, which shows that he has an identity with the public that goes beyond conventional party lines. But on the other hand, I don't think they would have picked Governor Palin either if they felt very confident that they were going to win. That's the choice of an underdog. That's the choice of somebody who's taking a risk in order to shake things up. And you know, if you look at some of these state-by-state polls, if you look at intensity of support, things like that, those are troubling signs for Senator McCain. And then just history is a troubling indicator for him. I mean, you don't have too many examples where the incumbent party keeps the White House for a third term, particularly in a time of war and economic disruption and a 75% wrong track number, meaning 75% of the public thinks the country is on the wrong track, and a president whose own approval number is in the high 20s. So, you know, history would suggest that the odds are stacked against Senator McCain.
Peter Baker, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always great to be here.
Peter Baker's article about the relationship between President Bush and John McCain is in this week's New York Times Magazine. He spoke to us from the Twin Cities.